Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
We're in our 20th year. That's why this is 1051B of You, the Owner's Manual podcast. The B's are always the guest segment. The A's, the latest medical news of the week and what it means to you. But this one has a special meaning. It's about the models for Alzheimer's disease in animals. And we get to talk to one of the masters, the Dean of the School of Biologic Sciences and the Chancellor's Professor of Neurobiology and Behavior at the University of California, Irvine, Frank LaFerla. The website, by the way, is mind.uci.edu. And it's about his journey, if you will, into finding models and what's wrong with past models and maybe what's been wrong with Alzheimer's or anti-Alzheimer's or anti-dementia drug development. This is, of course, You, the Owner's Manual podcast, and we are brought to you, as usual, by Persona Nutrition. If you want to talk to a nutritionist for absolutely free, find out what your diet is missing or not, take the free online assessment at personanutrition.com. Dr. LaFerla, how did you happen to get into the field of specifically doing Alzheimer's disease model research?
So I got into this in the early 1990s when Alzheimer's was just being appreciated by the lay community and also the scientific community for the impact that it was having on our society. And at that time, the technology for shuttling human genes into mice had been, I wouldn't say routine, it was still limited to a small number of labs throughout the country, but it was certainly becoming much more widely used. And I think the scientific community realized that there was an unmet need to try to find new therapies and a new understanding of the pathogenesis of Alzheimer's disease, and that mouse models could play a role in that process. So, you know, I actually began this around 1990, 1991.
Now, the history of models changed in the late 70s when genetic models started. But before then, there were models as well in animals, were there not?
Yes, there were. And so, you know, one of the early findings about the neurochemistry of Alzheimer's disease, for example, was that there was a selective loss of cholinergic neurons in the brains of Alzheimer's patients. So in other words, neurons that specifically make the neurotransmitter acetylcholine. And so the idea is that if you could develop or inject cholinergic toxins, you could selectively kill off those cells and try to model that aspect of Alzheimer's disease. And likewise, it was realized, I guess around 1984, 85, that the plaque protein consists of a small protein called beta amyloid, which is about 42 amino acids. And a lot of labs were starting to synthesize either the entire peptide or various fragments of it and injecting those directly into the brain to try to model Alzheimer's disease. But I think the really big advances came when it became possible to identify human genes and then to directly transfer those into mice. And there are a lot of benefits that came along with that.
Now, you say the breakthrough. We really haven't had a great breakthrough in treating or even in preventing Alzheimer's disease, although there are a lot of studies on how lifestyle changes can help prevent it independent of what the genes are. But the I guess the question is, where do we go from here? We've been working on tau and beta amyloid and had immunotherapies that destroy those. They haven't been as successful as we'd hoped. Why do you think that is?
I think there's a combination of reasons for why that has been the case. I think one of the reasons is that we generally tend to treat Alzheimer's using a single therapy, a monotherapy, and there are very few complex human diseases that you could treat that way. And Alzheimer's is likely to be one of those diseases where you're going to need to use a combination polypharmacy in order to treat it. So I think that's certainly one reason. Second reason is the fact that we generally start treating patients way too late, and they not only have significant neuropathological features like lots of plaques and tangles, but more significantly, by that point, they have a irreversible amount of neuron loss and loss of brain tissue. So, you know, it's interesting. If you look at an Alzheimer's brain at the time of autopsy, it might weigh 40 to 50% less than what a normal age-matched control brain would weigh. So it just shows you the kind of death and destruction that occurs in the brain. And so, you know, you might get to the point where even if you do have good drugs, if you wait too long, they're just not going to be that effective. And I think the same thing is true with many other human disorders, especially the cancers. We know, and no one would argue, that the sooner you start treating a patient, the better the likelihood is for success for that individual. And I think the same thing is probably going to be true for Alzheimer's disease.
And so what would you, I know there have been a lot of human trials, because the Cleveland Clinic through our Las Vegas Guruvo Center has probably done more drug trials than anyone. And I think they said, the last time I checked with the director there, they said there was more than $8 billion had been spent on drug trials in humans. As much success. And part of that may be the models that have been developed up to now haven't been as relevant to human disease, that is the animal models. Is that true? Is there still a problem with the models in human disease being different, or are we still, is it the drugs just haven't been good enough?
I think the answer is yes. I think the models certainly haven't been all we were hoping they would be. They're the best that we have at present time. I think if I were to generalize and summarize where the state of the field has been with animal models, is to say that up until recently, you know, as a matter of fact, I would say just this past year or so, the overwhelming majority of animal models modeled early onset Alzheimer's disease. And the reason for that is because animal modelers, such as myself, were able to take advantage of the fact that there were a limited number of human genes that, if they contained a genetic change, would definitively cause Alzheimer's disease in people with 100% penetrance, you know, 100% certainty. So obviously, a lot of the animal modelers, including myself, use those genes to put into mice. And so I think what we have done is recapitulated great models of early onset Alzheimer's disease. Well, the problem is early onset Alzheimer's disease accounts for maybe 2 to 5% of all cases of that form of dementia. Most Alzheimer's cases are what we call sporadic or late Alzheimer's disease, and they represent about 95 to 98% of all cases. And the biggest distinction between them is that age is probably a much more significant driver for late onset Alzheimer's disease than for early onset, which is generally driven by a specific genetic mutation. And so, you know that, and that was the rationale that the National Institutes of Health, and in particular the National Institute on Aging, had when they tried to start a new program to specifically develop models of late onset Alzheimer's disease.
And UCI, your work at UCI, We should tell you that Dr. Furwa is a dean of the biologic sciences at University of California, Irvine, and chancellor's professor in neurobiology and behavior, a very prestigious position. He previously was a department chair and director of the Institute for Memory Impairments and Neurologic Disorder. And the website you can learn more about his work and other work is mind.uci.edu. Mind, M-I-N-D, dot UCI for University of California, Irvine, dot EDU. And your work has been to develop new models. Is that correct?
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
And so what is it a genetic abnormality model, or do you cause inflammation in the brain, or is it a combination of something that produces more amyloid and inflammation? In other words, what role, people always ask, what role does inflammation, what role does diet, what role does exercise play in both the models and in the disease? And how do you use these lifestyle changes in animal models?
Yeah, so let me first start by describing what the rationale was for our model. And what we try to do, and what the plan is to do, is to humanize as many of the mouse genes that are relevant to Alzheimer's disease, but without inserting any genetic mutations that lead to early onset Alzheimer's. So the rationale is by humanizing the human Alzheimer's related genes in mice, we are creating a platform to then allow us to address the role that inflammation, diet, exercise, cognitive stimulation, diabetes, stress, whatever you want to look at, could play and be generalizable to the overwhelming majority of patients that themselves have sporadic late onset Alzheimer's disease. So that was the rationale. And so the first step in that process was the protein that's responsible for causing plaques in the human brain differs from the same protein in the mouse brain. And so they differ at three amino acid sites. And so we genetically changed the mouse protein so that it now looks like a human protein, but it still looks like a normal wild type human protein. So that's what we did.
And is it possible to test, for example, the anti-inflammatories or the forced exercise, and I don't know whether the stress of that increases the risk of mouse Alzheimer's or mouse dementia, or the site of the pathologic changes in mice brain. But in other words, in humans, managing stress, doing physical activity, choosing a diet that is essentially devoid of simple sugars and red meat and processed red meat and a number of other amino acids such as carnitine, lecithin, and choline greatly reduces the risk of sporadic or delays, the risk of sporadic onset late Alzheimer's. Is it possible to test those in models in mice?
Oh, absolutely. And we have, and my lab and many, many others, countless numbers of other Alzheimer's labs have done similar types of experiments in mouse models. And, you know, I'll give you an example of one that we did with the early onset models. Okay, so my lab previously, I think it was in 2003, created the first mouse model that developed both plaques and tangles. And I think even to this day, it's the only one that really develops both plaques and tangles. And it's a model, again, of the early onset Alzheimer's disease. And in this model, that pathology, those plaques and tangles, develop in an age-dependent process. And usually by a year, you start to see a good number of these plaques and tangles in the brains of these mice. Well, we did a very simple experiment where we took a human stress hormone and injected it into the mice for once a day for 1 week. And then at the end of that week, and when we started this experiment, the mice were 3 months old. So at the end of the experiment, the mice were now 3 months and 1 week old. We sacrificed the mice and we analyzed their brains. And pathologically, their brains looked comparable to a one-year-old mouse. So it was possible to greatly accelerate the pathology in these mice just by giving them a stress hormone. So we would routinely use these models in one of two ways, either to make the disease worse so that we can understand what are the risk factors for it, or once they develop pathological features and cognitive decline, we would try to improve the symptoms and see what would make it better. So we actually go both ways. We tried to make things better. We tried to make things worse. We tried to accelerate the pathology and the phenotype in these mice.
And where are we? So obviously, pharmaceutical companies as well as basic science researchers care about this. What's the process of taking these models and testing the drugs that will eventually become human? Is that a routine, or do people just try and create drugs that might work in humans, or is there some usual process, meaning do you go from mice Alzheimer's to guinea pig Alzheimer's to dog Alzheimer's to human, or what's the process?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, it varies, obviously, from investigator to investigator and from drug to drug. But generally, you want to start off in basic models, and it does. You might even go to even less, lesser models than a mouse. You might try a worm model or even a fly model and get exciting preliminary data, and then move up the chain and go from mouse models, maybe even to a rat, maybe to a marmoset or other non-human primate. And, you know, the more data that you get that shows efficacy and the more data that you get that identifies a mechanism of action, the more confident people are in advancing that compound or potential therapy through the clinic into clinical trials. So I would say that's all a good thing. You want to be able to do that for sure.
And now there's recently been, through controversy, a drug that was a monoclonal antibody that attacked the beta amyloid, as I understand it, that was recently approved, despite the controversy on the FDA advisory committee. What's your take on this? Is this just the first of a class of drugs, and thus it got approved for that reason, or does this offer, even in animal models, real progression of where we are in Alzheimer's treatment?
Well, like almost everything in this field, there's no real simple answer. It's very complicated. I will say that it's certainly in the animal models, this is certainly one of the most highly reproducible findings. Virtually every lab that injects an antibody into a mouse that has plaque deposition is able to remove a good amount of that plaque deposition from the brains of those mice. And we've been able to do very similar experiments. Now, there's a little bit of a twist. When, you know, and I told you earlier, we had these mouse models that had both plaques and tangles. When we injected this antibody against the plaque protein into our mice that only had plaques, we were able to restore the mouse's cognitive ability, or a good chunk of it. However, if we started the experiments a little bit later, once the mice had both plaques and tangles, even though we can lower the plaque burden in those mice, it had no effect on the cognitive ability of the mice. They didn't their cognition did not improve. So it suggests, and I think that's the reason why, it suggests that we need to go after other targets concomitantly when we go after beta amyloid, because there's a lot more going on in the brains of these individuals than just plaque deposition. Now, this is a good first step, and this will, I'm sure we will learn a lot, and I think the FDA is requiring Biogen to perform a phase 4 clinical study so that they can get more information, and it will help inform and help lead to improvements in the next generation of Alzheimer's drugs. But it certainly was not without its controversy, because it's just not clear that it really offered significant cognitive improvement make it worth the side effects and the cost, which I think are now set at $56,000 a year. So it's a very expensive.
Well, that's the cost, but the side effect of brain edema and brain bleeding, obviously, is one that's concerning, and the cost obviously doesn't include the MRIs that are necessary once a month.
Absolutely. So it's a very costly process. There's no doubt about that. Yes.
But so in your point of view, this is really was a useful thing to approve so that we can get more data and more clues about treatment.
I don't know if I would say that necessarily. I don't know if I don't think if I were on the panel, I would have voted at this point to approve it. I would have wanted to see the studies done first, because I think the greatest obligation is to make sure that you don't do any additional damage to these individuals. And the side effects could be, pretty, as you described them, edema, right, can be pretty severe. So.
We've been talking to one of the outstanding researchers in the field of modeling of Alzheimer's disease. Frank LaFerla is the Dean of Biologic Sciences and the Chancellor's Professor, which is a really prestigious position in neurobiology and behavior at the University of California, Irvine. In magnificent Irvine, California. It's a gorgeous campus, so if any of you are out there, do visit the campus, if just to see how it has grown sizably over the last 20 years. The website for this research and the science at UC Irvine has grown considerably, in no small measure to Dr. LaFerla, is mind.uci.edu. Mind, M-I-N-D, .uci for University of California, Irvine, .edu. Thank you very much, Dr. LaFerla, and thank you, Caitlin, for great engineering, but especially we need to thank our sponsor, Persona Nutrition, for allowing us to do this, as well as all of you, the 50,000 of you or so who downloaded this week's episode. Thanks very much. It's what motivates us. It's what motivates our guests to tell you so much of this good information. Thanks very much. We'll be back next week. And remember, you can find out more about this Alzheimer model at mind.uci.edu.